Welcome to El Telejon's La Liga Weekly. So this weekend we've discovered that football doesn't need fans and hooligans don't need football. In La Liga there was no booing, no whistling, no rude songs about referees, no sad-looking kids with banners begging for items of players' clothing. And if you're really desperate for a fight, think of something else to get angry about. Get yourself into the centre of London and create a river of urine from cheap lager. Real Madrid could sell the Bernabeu and play in front of superimposed fans at the Di Stefano Stadium. And the Emir of Qatar could enter a team into the Premier League and play 90 minutes of posh people from the last night of the prom singing Rule Britannia. And you normal people, you get to stay at home and send us your money. Congratulations. As an Englishman, I should be reluctant to culturally impose on great Spanish traditions. But when the fans do return, could we maybe have a rethink on the practice of waving your snotty hanky around whenever your team has lost a couple of matches? Or, for example, if you're a Valencia fan and you just watched Mukhtar Diakabi put in one of his special performances. Importantly, this weekend, the football was back, although Fernando Pacheco seems to have forgotten the rules. Referees didn't get as much grief, but Antonio Mateo Lajos still managed to give a home banker decision in the Seville derby. And it's very clear that a team hairdresser must now be included on the list of essential personnel. Or maybe Christian Teo has just turned grey during lockdown. One thing was reassuringly unchanged. Casemiro remains the Graham Pole of midfielders, a minimum of 4 yellow card offences for each red card. Now, Terry Gibson was... Hang on, Terry. Terry Gee. There we are. they're delighted you're here, Terry.
Perfect. Absolutely wonderful. Great intro, John.
Thank you. So, we've got a lot of games to watch. Do you want to talk about the crowd noise? Talking point, action aside. Where do you stand? Did you enjoy it? Do you like it?
Oh, yeah, massive. I mean, it needs some tweaking, but I think for the first round of the games, there was some games better than others. Some they got it spot on. I think the Valencia one against Levante, I completely forgot 10 minutes into the game that it was fake crowd and fake noise. It worked perfectly. It fitted. I was surprised at the Real Madrid one. They had they track the actual home supporters, don't they? So if Sevilla, for instance, you're going to get Sevilla supporters singing in the background as opposed to Betis, and with Real Madrid, obviously they fit the track from the Bernabeu because they've got no choice. But that seemed odd when we knew they were playing in a 6,000 capacity stadium. With nobody in it, of course, and yet there was a sound of 100,000 people at the Bernabeu in the background. I thought Leganés suffered because I always think that Leganés have a decent atmosphere in this stadium. But the track on the soundtrack to the Leganés via the lid game was quieter than it probably should have been. And also, I thought Real Sociedad Osasuna was quieter than it normally is in that stadium. So, but in general, I think it's when I watched the Bundesliga games the weeks prior to that, I have to be honest, it can be a hard watch because of the lack of crowd noise. One or two Bundesliga games had the soundtrack put on and it worked better. But I thought with the added fake crowd, the noise, the soundtrack behind the game, it's weird calling a soundtrack behind a game of football. But no, I thought it made for a much more enjoyable experience. The games I'm moaning about, Leganés and Real Sociedad, sounded like they were behind closed doors. Yes. So that's why I was disappointed with them. It didn't sound the same as the Valencia-Levante game, Espanyol-Alaves, Celta Villarreal. They all had good sound effects. So it needs some work on. But for the first week, I thought it was a great initiative and it made for a much better, enjoyment, made for better viewing, watching at home.
Everyone loves the crowd noise. I think generally one person complained to me. I put it on Twitter and I think it must have been at least, I don't know, sort of 20 people replied or something and 19 liked it and one didn't. And I think that's probably about right because people like, it's sort of escapism, isn't it? You're not necessarily there to really pay attention to everything. So a bit of noise in the background, you forget, like you say, you forget it's on after a while, don't you? I mean, partly as some sort of historian journalism perspective, I'm sort of thinking this is weird because this is not, we're watching something slightly fake, aren't we? Because this is not what's really happening. What's really happening is that there's a global pandemic and a virus around and they're playing in an empty stadium, but we're not really, we're almost forgetting that, aren't we? But I guess it's just escapism. It's TV, isn't it? You know, just there. People are there to enjoy themselves. And so I guess that's what it's doing. The one thing I'm not convinced by the superimposing the graphics, because certain times the ball, where the on the tight stadiums, when a guy's taken a throw in, his head disappears behind the effectively the green screen, and where they try and do it behind the goal, when a corner or a cross gets hoisted up in the air, it disappears. So I think my preference would be I'd basically try and just kit out. Well, Real Sociedad, they did. They had a big banner and flags, and I'd basically just decorate it. But I'd play the crowd noise because people like the crowd noise. I think that's fair enough, isn't it? Anyway,
one game where the player taking the corner, the bottom half of his body disappeared.
We've
seen it in the past as well when we're working together, that sometimes someone running down the wing with the superimposed graphics that we get for television purposes, their head is missing.
So we had to work against screen off tube. Yeah. The advertising hoardings would make people disappear, wouldn't they? Guessing who he was by half of his body. Yeah.
And I think that the ultimate thing was when players scored, they still run to the crowd behind the goal.
That happened on five
or six occasions, and they're punching the air and looking at an empty stand behind the goal.
Celebrating
with the fake supporters that they can't see, but we can. And it worked on television. You see Rodrigo score and he runs up behind the goal and he's punching the air and there's no one there. But it looks as if he's celebrating with the supporters. So I thought that was hilarious that the players still, they can see an empty stadium. They're not playing they can't see fake supporters. Yet when they score, they still run across and punch the air.
I guess you do that in the garden, don't you? Yeah, kids in the garden or in the park do that, don't they?
They're clapping the fans and at the end of a game and stuff. And and it's their mates who have got the ump because they're pissed off because they're not on the pitch. And they're clapping back. And I mean, one of the commentators said, listen to the noise of the supporters. And it cut four subs all got the ump because they're not playing. Got their masks on, sitting apart. Couldn't look more sulky if they tried. 20 players have played in that game and they're not one of them. Not 20, but 11 starters, 5 more subs coming on, and they're not one of them. And they cut to them in the stand pretending that they're happy that their team had just equalised. I understand the 5 sub rule. I understand that. I don't like it though, but I understand.
All right, okay. Would you have changed it?
I think it's a wise choice. Because I mean, this is the first round of games. They all play. I mean, the games start tonight again. You know, I'm looking at the fixtures and suddenly I'm looking ahead at fixtures and you're seeing Barcelona, for instance, play Leganés on week 29, which is the 16th, which is tomorrow. And then on the 19th, I'm looking at big games coming up, which I'm presuming is 19th. Is that Friday? They play Seville away. So you're looking at the games. I think we don't realise yet. That's the first game. It was a pleasure to have it back. But I think when you're looking ahead now and you've got the games next round starting tonight, two, three, four games in, we're going to realise how heavy this schedule is going to be. So the 5 sub rule, it's obvious that it has to be there. But I don't like it.
That's fair enough. You know, it's an emergency, isn't it?
You're watching the second half and all of a sudden you're putting, the game was breaking up too much. And they become like a pre-season game then.
On that subject, should we do Barcelona as they? I know they weren't first up. It's the Seville derby. Well, let's talk about that because I thought they did really well. However, and Messi obviously scored in the 90th minute. I must say, I was surprised really that Messi was still on in the 90th minute to put a fourth goal past Mallorca, given what you've just said.
Well, the choice will always be his. And particularly with a manager like Quique Setién, he's not going to start rocking the boat by upsetting Messi. So I guarantee you that decision will be Messi's, and it would have been agreed upon by Quique Setién. And it's for Messi to decide, and rightly so. I think what we see from Lionel Messi is his game management in terms of bursting into action here and there. He's not a player that runs around the pitch, and covers 90 minutes. He's not a Gaizka Toquero, for instance, who, you know, gives every ounce for every minute. Messi doesn't have to. He's got the ability just to burst into the game. And the choice will be completely Messi's. So if Messi during a game thinks it's wise, then I'm pretty sure he will, you know, let Quique Setién know and he'll make the change. But it's Setién doesn't have the power. He can have the conversation with Messi, but he doesn't have the power, and it's wise for him to allow Messi to... I know people might disagree. They say that the manager should always be in charge, but that clearly isn't the case with, you know, one of the best players that's ever played the game. He knows what he needs. Messi might have felt... I actually thought he got better as the game went on. I'm not saying he was bad before, but I thought he looked better as the game went on, and he clearly feels that he needs the match practice. You know, and when you're Messi, you can, as I say, burst into the game, little fits and starts, and it, you know, wasn't a surprise. He wants goals. He got the last goal of the game, and he and Barcelona would have been very happy with a good night's work.
And I mean, sort of undramatic with the big clubs, wasn't it? So, because like Barcelona, Real Madrid took a very early lead, and when you're that good, you know, they were never seriously threatened. I mean, I thought Eibar did quite well, to be honest with you, from 3-0 down, but again, there was never really a serious threat against them.
Well, do you know what? I was disappointed with this game. I sort of gone off of Eibar and Mendilibar over the weekend. Because I know on one hand I'm talking about these heavy fixture lists that's coming up, but this was a throwback to the days when this happened quite regularly in La Liga, where a manager kind of chucked a game away. You know, so he's looking at thinking, oh, we got Real Madrid away. In a few days' time, we play Athletic Bilbao at home. They've got some tough games coming up. I don't think they're in a position to throw any game away. Then they've got Getafe away. And I think it was almost the case of Mendilibar. There's, you know, you look at the bench, look at the change in form for Eibar when they started to put first-team players back on the pitch. And they scored 3-1. Courtois made a couple of good saves. Sergi Emerick hits the bar. Casemiro should have got sent off. So that 3-0 at half-time, suddenly by putting a few better players on, that result, it could have been different. Because there was such a contrast in the performances from both teams. And there was reasons why Eibar weren't very good in the first half, because they didn't play their best team. And when they started putting the better players on, there was a change in form. And Real Madrid in the first half were sensational, took full advantage of playing against players that don't play on a regular basis. An early goal from Toni Kroos, fabulous goal. And at one stage, when it was 3-0, he thought it was going to be 6-7, 8-0. But of course, you know, we know in these times where, you know, we don't know the fitness levels of the players. They gave a lot in the first half, slowed it down, understandably, when you're 3-0 up as well. But there was a slight cause for concern, I would imagine, for Zidane. And I think that's been, you know, noted in the press that he wasn't happy with the second half performance. But I thought I thought Eibar weren't a million miles away from a comeback in that game. As I say, Sergi Emerick hit the bar with his first touch when he came on. Courtois made a really good save from Pedro Leon. There was one or two other bits of action. I mean, if one of those had gone in and we'd gone back to 3-2 with 20 minutes left, then it, you know, we might be talking about a whole different story, but it didn't happen. And Real Madrid, talking about the players of the week, maybe, and we're talking about a three-month break. How good was Sergio Ramos, by the way? How fit did he look?
Yeah.
You know, I know he came off and was substituted, you know, relatively early, just after the hour. But the goal he scored, intercepting the pass from just outside his own penalty area, knocking it off to Benzema, and he ran past Cristoforo in midfield. Cristoforo had no answer. He was 8 years younger, and he got himself into the penalty area for a tap-in after Hazard laid him up nicely. But I thought Ramos was, you know, so 34-year-old, 3 month break. He's obviously been keeping himself really fit. And it's pleasing to see, because I know he's got his detractors. I love him being about in La Liga. I think, you know, he's a representative of Real Madrid. He's going to be a legend. He is already. He has his rough parts to his game that everybody knows about. But I think in terms of being a captain of Real Madrid, still involved with the Spanish national team, a great example for a 34-year-old with such motivation. I mean, we've talked about Ronaldo over the years, but Ramos can be put in that category as well. He's squeezing every last bit he can out of his football career. And I thought he was a joy to watch at the weekend.
Obviously, Courtois didn't cover himself in glory with the Eibar goal. I saw Guillaume Balague, our friend and colleague, mentioned that he thought the goalkeepers as a whole were a bit rusty. I mean, there were a few mistakes. Obviously, Pacheco had a bizarre moment, Alaves, away to Espanyol, which was decisive in the game, wasn't it? He totally misjudged a long ball, ended up catching it well out miles out. Well, not miles, but, you know, yeah, a good stride outside of the penalty area when he could have waited and it would have gone into the penalty area. It was bizarre, wasn't it? And then there was Coya, wasn't it? In at the very beginning, which again was decisive, wasn't it, for Leganés against Valladolid. So Enes Unal then got the early goal. It wasn't entirely the goalkeeper's fault, that one. But
it was.
I mean, it was. I was thinking it was 99.9%, wasn't it? Because the defender, Awaziem, wasn't it?
Yes.
He sort of had a quick look, and then he headed it, and he's like, he sort of couldn't believe that Cuellar was where he was, would he? That he was right on his toes almost, and he headed it past him, didn't he?
Yeah.
So, were goalkeepers bad, or is that within the normal bounds of a weekend of, you know, you'd expect a mistake or two from keepers along the way?
Yeah, I don't think it was that bad, actually. I think there was a David Soria made a mistake for Granada's winner where he spilled a shot that he should have saved. Cuellar's was a massive mistake, but I've no idea. Awaziem was dealing with that through ball. He was there first before Unal. It was a simple header back to his goalkeeper. And then when he does it, he's got every right to believe his goalkeeper's going to be in his penalty area and waiting for the header. And as he heads it, Cuellar is like 8 yards outside the penalty box. So that was a blatant mistake. But I looking at the other goalkeepers, Manolo Reina didn't have any mistakes against Barcelona. I thought the Athletic Bilbao, Atletico game, both goalkeepers were good in there. Courtois had a decent game. I think he was slightly unlucky with a goal because it does get a deflection, but it just trundles into the back of the net, doesn't it? Dimitrovic in that game wasn't at fault for any of the goals. Ramiro, Ruben Martinez for Osasuna. I think it's my take on it is I actually think the strikers are the ones that suffered. They're the ones that are going to take longer to find that explosive dynamic pace to beat defenders, to get across defenders, to run past defenders, the anticipation, just general sharpness. And you look at the amount of goals scored at the weekend and you look at the players that scored them, there's actually not many centre forwards. I thought there was a lot of missed opportunities that in normal circumstances a player would have gotten the end of a cross if it had been match fit. But I have to say, I think how the players have re-entered back in after a 3-month break, it deserves a massive round of applause because they looked fit. Their endurance levels were good. Thankfully, we haven't seen too many injuries, but it is the first round of games. It might start to get worse when we go off another game in 3 days. But I thought that the players in general really have looked after themselves. They've bounced back quickly. And I think there is a level of endurance amongst all the players that is very similar, but the strikers are the ones that need that, you know, explosive pace, that dynamic burst of pace, as I say, to run past defenders, to get across defenders. So I actually feel, you know, and I don't have a lot of time for goalkeepers, you know that. So no more excuses. They've got their own coaches, they've got everything. It's a valid point that Gia makes. In lockdown, I guess they're having to come up with different ways of, you know, having a ball in the garden or on a balcony if you live in a flat or in a front room. I get that. But I think, for me, it was the strikers that lacked that sharpness that we normally see. Because there were a lot of players we rely on. I mean, even Angel, when he comes on for Getafe, was miles off the pace. Roger Marti got sent off for Levante. He was miles off the pace. You know, there was a few players that we normally rely on to be sharp and you know, that ability to run in behind.
Yeah, and Luke de Jong looked a bit slow and clumsy. There he is.
Oh, Borja Iglesias, by the way, when we're talking.
Yes, he was old poor. Man.
Yeah, he was yeah, poor. Yeah. So yeah. I think that the strikers are the ones, and that's where we, you know, you look at some of the goal scorers, Campos and Fernando for Sevilla. Carlos Fernandez scored for Granada. He didn't start up front, but he was up front when he scored the goal. Timo scored for Getafe. Bernardo and Woulet for Espanyol. Now, Woulet was playing up front. Trigueros comes in as a sub and scores. Oscar Rodriguez. Real Madrid, perfect example. Toni Kroos, Ramos, Marcelo. So I think it's going to take a while for those strikers to be able to be the players to make the difference in games. And that will come after, you know, two or three matches if they're still fit and if they're not knackered after playing three games in a week for 3 weeks.
Yes. Right. We'll leave it there. We'll have a quick break and then we'll come back and we'll round up the rest of the action. Welcome back. Let's go through all these scores, make sure that you're up to date. Well, sort of up to date. Obviously, there might have been another game by the time you're listening to that. That's football these days. So we started off with Sevilla 2, Betis 0, Ocampos and Fernando with the goal scorers. And then Friday, we had Granada 2, Getafe 1. Granada coming from behind, actually. Genet own goal and Carlos Fernandez after David Timor. A good finish for Getafe. 1-1 in the Valencia derby. A bit of drama, Rodrigo, with what we thought was a late goal against 10-man Levante. But then the Acabi gave a penalty away. Gonzalo Melero converted it. Espanyol beat Alaves 2-0 after Pacheco's red card. Bernardo Woulet. Celta Vigo 0, Villarreal 1. Trigueros with a late goal. That was a blow for Celta Vigo. Although home away, we might get to that, whether home away matters anymore. We'll see. Leganes 1, Valladolid 2. Obviously, Mallorca 0, Barca 4. We've discussed Athletic 1, Atletico 1, Real Madrid beat Eibar 3-1. And then the last game was Real Sociedad 1, Osasuna 1. Now, Terry has watched every single game and taken notes and checked the formations, tactics, personnel and everything. And Terry, what's your tactical analysis of the weekend?
But I think that, I mean, you go through the games, we mentioned earlier about the five subs, and for some managers who can't resist changing systems too often, in my opinion, it's now an extra two, should we call them toys, to play with in terms of being a tactical genius, and they just can't resist the temptation. So I would say Celta Vigo. I say we're never sure which formation, which style they're going to play. I know their style. They like to pass out the back, go through the lines. But some weeks it's a three at the back, some weeks it's a four, some weeks it's three up front, some weeks it's two. And I just felt in their defeat against Villarreal, they were chopping and changing throughout the game. They started with a back four, they ended up with three at the back. And, you know, different formations in terms of the midfield system, the front system. And I think players in a relegation battle, they need to know, you know, some sort of system on a regular basis. Osasuna are a great example of that with their performance against Real Sociedad. Every player knows what he's doing. It was a superb team performance because they all know their jobs. They all know their roles. Whether that's a player coming as a sub, he knows he's taking the place of the player that's been playing for 60 minutes. He's going to come and do exactly the same job. So I think Celta are guilty of that. Leganes, I understand. Javier Aguirre, again, similar thing. You're never sure whether they're going to play three at the back, four at the back, or wing backs, or full backs playing in midfield, and is it going to be two up front? Is it going to be one up front? Oscar Rodriguez played three different positions in that game. He started off the striker, then he went wide right in an attacking a midfield attacking position, and then ended up playing orthodox central midfield in a two. So I think the temptation is always there to try and change things to come up with a winning formula. Leganes and Celta are both suffering this season, both, you know, struggling to get results. But I think in general, if they can, you know, the temptation is there with the extra two subs to make a sub at half time. We've come to realise now that doesn't count as one of those three breaks. You know, that was the rule, was that you can make five subs at three different times, but half time doesn't count as one of those three. I presume so, because teams have been doing it, and then using three more breaks during the second half. So the temptation there is now for, you know, managers not only to rotate too much, but to be too tactical, too technical. And the games are coming thick and fast. Yeah. Players need to know their roles. There isn't going to be any time for training in between matches. And those teams that have a system that they understand and they're used to will have a better chance of success for the rest of the season. So I think that some of the managers need to calm down a touch with the, I've got five subs, I can use them all. I can try this system, I can try that system. I can move this player from here to there and then move him somewhere else. I think it just needs a, they just need to calm down a touch.
It's an interesting book, because I read something, Gary Neville talking about his time at Valencia, and he praised Ernesto Valverde because he came up against Valverde, and he gave Valverde an example of a coach who'd outwitted him, because Neville was saying, everything I did, he was already ahead of me, and he made changes, and I tried to make changes, and he made, which is almost sort of painting football as a chess match played between managers.
Yeah, no,
whereas your point is just
better players.
Yeah. Yeah.
that was the reason. Better players. I mean, it's.
But he was. That was. Yeah, but that was Valencia against Athletic, which, you know. Yeah, but they weren't necessarily better players. I mean, the manager has some impact on it, doesn't he? You know, I get your point that actually.
I assumed he was Barcelona manager then. The 7-0, but that was Luis Enrique, wasn't it?
Yeah. So. But the manager has some impact on it, doesn't it? But your point is a fascinating one, because, you know, there are books about tactics and people spend, do their study and do their coaching badges about tactics and stuff. But so from a player's point of view, sometimes you say, actually, just calm down, let me know what I'm doing, and I'm actually better off without endless changes.
Yeah, no, totally. I guarantee you, you know, players prefer that method. They will take on board a change here and there if it's a slight change, but if you're changing two or three times a game, and from each game you play, then the players will just be, you know, they'll wash their hands of responsibility, and they'll say, it's his fault, you know, he doesn't know what he's doing, we don't know what we're doing anymore. And I think clearly, you know, Simeone has proved that Atletico over the years, that his team have a system, they know how they're playing. Barcelona do, Real Madrid do, that, you know, Sevilla have got to grips with their style of play and their system this season under Lopetegui. Betis, I don't know what they're doing. They don't look like the players know what they're doing either. Getafe, perfect example. Osasuna, I mentioned. You know, it has to be, I think, the Valencia under Nuno. They were good. They knew their style. They knew their system. You know, I think it's these managers that chop and change and are too much. Trust me, as a player and as a coach, the experiences I've had, players like the odd change here and there. It gives them, you know, something new to think about, and they can embrace it. But it's those managers and coaches that change. It does appear to the players that, you know, the manager's not really convinced he knows the right way for us to play. So I think they have to be. Yeah, there's always, you know, it's why managers, what manager's job is to assess a game and to come up with a solution to, you know, to beat the opposition or to stop the opposition, to do what's right for your team. But there has to be a sense, particularly in this time now where we've got so many games in such a short space of time. Why, you know, as I said, there's going to be no training in between to work on new systems, new tactics. And you have to, once again, go back to the player's instincts. You know, what is their position? You're not going to change, you know, some of these players. At the time of life they are in their career, you're not going to, you know, walk into a dressing room and say to Fernando at Sevilla, by the way, I want you to play, you know, just off the front now, and I want you to do this, and I want you to, you know, to do something different. And Fernando says, I'm 32 and I've always been a holding midfielder. Now you want me to play as a number 10 or, you know, wide on the left or do something different. You use the tools you've got at your disposal and have a system that the players understand. And you know, it's not just them understanding their own position. They then build understandings with players in other positions. You get to know the role of your teammate, you know. So, you know, but the best teams have players that if someone's not doing their job, it's not down to the manager to tell them. Other players will be aware of that he's not, you know, pulling his weight, he's not, you know, showing his responsibilities. We're closing down as a team and he's not doing it. Then the other players, it's not up to the manager to tell him, it'll be the players. You know, so it's, I think that try and be a lot more simple that would be my advice to, you know, the coaches I was talking about earlier that think that they've got to come up with something different every 10 minutes to get a performance and a result.
Right. The Geraghty boys are unhappy with Diakabi. Daryl says, can he be the skipper of the How Does He Get a Game 11? James says, skipper, manager, assistant coach, sporting director, CEO and board member. I wouldn't pick him if I had anyone else to choose from. I was asked last night when the game was on who I'd put in there ahead of him, and I said Valencia should play with 10. Is that a bit harsh? So that particular performance, exciting conclusion to the Valencia derby. We're not going to go through every game in detail because obviously by the time you listen to this, they'll be off and running again. But yeah, just give us a quick assessment of the closing stages of that game.
Oh, the closing stages were brilliant. I thought it was a fantastic game, possibly the best game of the weekend. I thought Levante more than played their part. I mean, they went toe-to-toe with Valencia. I thought Jose Gaya gave one of the best left-back performances I've seen in a long time. And that was the point I was making earlier about the forwards not being sharp enough. He could have provided 6, 7, 8 goals by the way he played down the left, the crosses he cut, he got across. Eventually, Rodrigo got on the end of one of his crosses. And the game was won. And then Diakabi, he gives away the free kick. We're talking the 97th minute. Rodrigo scored in the 89th. In the 97th minute, he gives away a cheap free kick. And when the ball's coming into the penalty area, he then grabs an attacking player's jersey, pulls him to the ground and gives away a penalty. So, I mean, Hugo Guillamon was a young 20-year-old making his debut, and he was the more responsible out of the two centre-backs. And, you know, it's not the first mistake we've seen from Diakabi. He's saving graces. There's not going to be any supporters in the stadium to, you know, give him the grief that he probably would have got at the Mestalla on his next game there. So it's tough. He's only 23. He's got some good attributes. That he's very raw in terms of where he is now in his career. And you know, Valencia have got injuries in defence, hence the reason Guillamon was playing alongside him. So it's tough on Diakabi. But it was a poor error. And it gave Levante, Gonzalo Melero the chance to get a deserved equaliser. I thought they were fantastic as well, Levante. Down to 10 men with Roger Marti getting himself sent off in the 73rd minute. And I thought that was a super game of football.
The Seville derby, we keep banging on about it being a derby. It doesn't really matter that it's a derby, does it? Because there were no fans. Although somehow Mateo Lajos got pressurised by the fake fans, the digitised fans on these seats behind the goal and gave a penalty. Actually, he got absolutely hammered, I noted. I had a quick look on Twitter. And he got absolutely slaughtered. But he was Bartra not asking for it? Did he not go clambering over the back of a player that he didn't need to? He didn't need to make that kind of challenge in the penalty area, and the referee gave a penalty.
Yeah, I thought it was harsh, but I agree with you. I think it was when you saw the slow motion and the referee is there looking straight at it, he was in a good position. You can see that Bartra does gain a slight advantage by jumping early. He says he jumped early, but that's because he got his arm up and held the player down, and the player wasn't able to jump. So, yeah, I can. You see them given, and I think Bartra did make. I think that the bigger talking point from that, there's two talking points. Betis were awful, first of all. Didn't show anything in attack. Had one attempt on goal from Pedraza, who was a sub in the last few minutes, and it bounced about 5 times before it reached Vasilic. And also the other part of that is that Sevilla did not make hard work of winning games. They should win comfortably. You know, they dominated from start to finish. Clearly the better team. And yet they don't take their chances. And they end up winning a game they dominated for the entire match with a penalty from Ocampos and a goal from a set piece for Fernando. So no goals from open play. So that's something they need to be more efficient. They need to be a little bit more daring, a little bit more creative, take a few more chances. And then when those chances, you know, are created, then they have to be more efficient. Ocampos was fantastic. Betis it was worrying. I thought it was a you know, when you look at that, the lack of fight from Betis, the players in that game, in a derby, it still is a derby, and I thought there was one or two worrying signs, and Ruby must be a manager under pressure because they've underachieved, and now I think they've been dragged. They're not a million miles away from being dragged into the relegation fight.
But this is an interesting point, isn't it? Are managers, can you sack a manager at the moment? Because I suppose, where would you get another one from? Because, I mean, literally, they've had to go through, they're in sort of this sort of quarantine bubble together, aren't they? So you could, I mean, it'd be awful to be sacked, wouldn't it, at the moment?
Yeah.
It'd be such an insult because they're almost going to go without a manager. You know what I mean? You can't just go and get an unemployed guy and bring him in. He would have to presumably go through, he'd have to be tested and quarantined and all of this kind of stuff. Or do you just promote the number two?
Or coach him like a plastic, like David Blaine, remember the box? a coach.
On a big doorboard.
Him and old Aguasil last night, he was doing some instructions from the bench with his gloves on. And it looked like...
He looked like a doctor, didn't he?
Well, no, he looked like a mime artist. He was like stuck in a box. He had gloves on him. There was a little touch of Mr. Bean about him as well, and he was sort of waving his arms and he was doing a little dance. And I thought, that's a gif if ever I've seen one. No, I presume if they were to... I didn't mean they would sack him now. It'd be a massive improvement. And otherwise, I could see a replacement in the summer. Interestingly enough, Guillaume has said over the course of the last few days, Guillaume Balague, that Unai Emery has an offer, a good offer in Spanish football. Now, there's only a certain amount of clubs that he will, become manager of. And Betis is one of those links. It'd be an incredible story that the manager of Sevilla, I'm sure he's not the first. But it would be certainly add some oomph to that derby if he does take over at Betis. Talking Valencia, of course, that's another option. But other than that, he's not going to take over Real Madrid, Barcelona, and some of the other clubs that he might be interested in. But Valencia and Betis are the two that you would say if Unai Emery is coming back and he has got an offer, I guess it might be one of those two clubs. So Ruby needs to improve. As I say, the way they performed, I genuinely think they are in danger of getting dragged into the relegation fight now.
Yeah. Let's just pick one more. Atletico. Diego Costa. Because obviously we've seen this group of players who we'd written off for the season back in action, sort of, a weird bonus from a horrible situation, of course. So what did you make of that one?
A really good game. And I think it was actually a shame, I think, that both teams, and understandably so, were quite happy with a point each. Athletic will think a good point is a good point at home to Atletico. Atletico were behind, got the equaliser, and in the second half it sort of just tapered away a bit where both teams were reluctant to risk too much to get all 3 points. But I think it was really high quality, interesting tactics from Simeone, where he played Carrasco and Llorente off of Diego Costa. So he had a midfield three of Thomas Partey, Koke and Sal. And this new position, Simeone knows his players better than me, but we have watched Llorente for quite a while now. It was a huge surprise when he scores 2 goals against Liverpool. And I'm surprised now that a player with his instincts, in that position, he's only going to offer hard work, closing down from the front.
Yeah.
Carrasco, it suited him. I thought he had a really good game, which is pleasing to see. He's a player I like, and I would like to see stay in La Liga. But for Llorente, he's a hard-working, orthodox, can be defensive midfield player, but that's his instincts. And to ask him to play as a second striker, playing from the right, it looked like he was having to think about every single thing he was going to do, apart from running around, closing down, and being the first line of defence. So whether we'll see that again, as I say, Simeone knows him better than me, sees him training every day, might think that he's got the attributes to be that type of player. But I would still say at the moment, if you're going to go for one of those players in the starting lineup, Correa, obviously João Felix, when he's fit, will be possibly better options.
Right, I think we better leave it there because we've got to get this processed and sent out to everybody before the next round of games starts again, which starts again today. So we're recording this morning and Levante-Sevilla is this afternoon, isn't it? Tea time. So, So enjoy your Spanish football, everybody. Terry is relentless. It's more than the World Cup. At the start of the World Cup, I set myself the task of watching every game. And, you know, at some point when Saudi Arabia are playing Ukraine, I'm sort of thinking, really?
I actually like some of the games where people are not thinking, oh, I'm going to watch that. I've interested
in assessing
players and looking at some of the players. And we know the players at the big clubs. And I'm interested in looking at the players. My most interesting game of the weekend was Leganés Valladolid. Now that, you know, people will go, he's nuts. There was obvious attractions to the other ones, but I think that for the reasons I watch the games, A, you need to keep on top of those teams that we're going to talk about. They're not as familiar as Barcelona and Real Madrid and Valencia, Atletico, Sevilla, Betis, all those. And it's important to keep on top of it. And there was four or five reasons why I wanted to watch that game, because there was, you know, some players I'm interested in to see how they do.
Yes, and the games keep coming thick and fast. So we will be back. We'll have this round of games, and then we'll be back with more podcasts again. The crowd are going wild. Listen to them. They're loving it. They love it. They love us, Terry. Right. We'll speak to you all soon with another podcast. Bye-bye.